that can be made to stop this war. I think there are compromises that can be found.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Clearly, a discussion that we need to continue at a future date. Timothy Snyder, Yale, professor of history, author of many books, including The Road to Unfreedom, Russia, Europe, America, and On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. And thank you to Andrew Coburn, Washington editor of Harper's Magazine, his new book, The Spoils of War, Power, Profit, and the American War Machine. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
If you think or know you had COVID-19, you can be around others after 10 days since symptoms first appeared, and after 24 hours with no fever without fever-reducing medication, and after other symptoms have improved. If you have tested positive for COVID-19 and you had no symptoms, you can be around others 10 days after you got tested for COVID-19. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/coronavirus.
And it's just about 6 o'clock. You're listening to radio station WUSB. And it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
I'm over here.
How you doing?
I think. How are you? I'm fine. Yeah, great. Fine. Yeah. Good.
As fine as we can be. Yeah, I know, with all the garbage that's going on in the world.
Yeah, why would you even ask me that?
Well, because I have to. It's in my contract, for God's sake. It's what, you need help with your headphones there? That's, you want me to adjust one of these knobs that you've somehow managed to put out of your way? I can make it louder. Is that better? Okay,
Yes.
I can only do so much. All right. What a week this has been. Of course, you know, we talked about this last week when we saw Russia beginning its invasion process, when they recognized the breakaway republics. It's interesting because, you know, we've kind of known what was coming for so long. Joe Biden has pretty much been predicting every single step of the way. And we sort of had a guide, like, okay, they did this, next they're going to do that, and it's exactly what they did, exactly what happened. What we didn't predict, what we didn't see coming, was the incredible courageousness of the Ukrainian people, of the resistance, the inspiration from just regular people who are fighting back, preventing this onslaught from succeeding. And I gotta say, this has really bolstered my faith in humanity. This, and also the incredible reaction from people like us, you know, individual people all around the world, and our governments, our corporations, you name it. Everybody is pretty much stepping up, with some exceptions, but so many of us are stepping up and saying, no, this is not acceptable. You know, you might, in another context, you might call it cancel culture. You might say, you're silencing the opposition. You're silencing those people that you deem to be unacceptable. And I say, good. Then this is what cancel culture should be. This is what being woke is all about. I don't think the world has ever been in a place like this where so many people get it at the same time. I mean, think back to the major conflicts, think back to World War II. You know, people were afraid of Germany, and they certainly fought back, and there was global outrage. But I don't think there was this kind of global consciousness where everybody took action on a non-military scale as well as a military scale where possible. And I say where possible because right now it's difficult. It's tricky. You know, there are people who say, a lot of people say that NATO can't get involved because Ukraine is not a NATO country. We've been saying that. It's not entirely true. Do you remember the bombing of Serbia by NATO? You know, nobody in the former Yugoslavia was a NATO member at the time. And yet, NATO found a reason to step in and do something, because stability was being threatened. There was genocide going on. It can happen. It can be something that NATO does. But, and it's important to recognize this, the consequences could be severe. You know, Serbia was not a nuclear power. Russia is. And right now, there's a lot of concern over just what's going on in Putin's head. He seems, what's the word for it, Kyle? He seems out of sorts. It's a nice way of saying it. He's always been a brutal dictator. Okay, fine, but he seems not himself. That speech he gave a week ago about Ukraine and how it's not a real country and that's always belonged to Russia, that was unhinged. It's absolutely crazy. I mean, we're talking Trump-style crazy here. Only this guy knows what he's doing, and it's scary. So you don't want to mess with that too much and make it even more unstable. You need to learn more. You need to be smart. And right now, I think we're doing as much as we can and figuring out ways we can do more. Of course, you know, there are parts of the world, parts of our own country that aren't doing nearly enough. I mean, you know, to see the some of the pundits on Fox News initially, before it became too unpalatable for them to continue with their garbage, they were basically saying, "What did Putin do that's so bad? You know, he's a strong leader. We need strong leaders like that." Horrible things. Tucker Carlson, I think, is still saying things like this. It's awful. And then Trump himself, calling a genius, calling him smart for invading Ukraine before he himself realized, okay, that's probably a step too far. Tried to reel it in a little bit. You had Marjorie Taylor Greene at CPAC this weekend. Prior to that, she went to a white nationalist rally. That's what it was. You explain to me what kind of a conference has people chanting Putin. Literally, they were chanting Putin and praising him. Not dancing around it, but literally doing just that. And she was a guest there, an honored guest. She heard what they were saying. Didn't matter. And then welcomed at CPAC. Right afterwards, they knew as well. Didn't matter. You know who wasn't welcome at CPAC? Lynn Cheney. Yeah, that's too much. They can't handle that. So there are people doing the right thing, and there are lots of people who are very late to the game doing anything. Let's remember that. Let's not forget who these people are. But for now, it's about helping Ukraine. It's about helping the people there. And Kyle, I just keep remembering our time in Ukraine. The two times we were there. An incredible time exploring the place. We went, we actually went from Belarus into Ukraine. And it's sad to think of all the horror that is going from Belarus to Ukraine right now. But we spent some time in Belarus, one of the weirdest countries we've ever been to, like going back to the Soviet Union. And after getting through that, we figured, let's go to Ukraine. Let's see what Kiev is like. And we did. And I remember, you know, walking around that city, how hilly it was. And at the time, they've been going through this for quite a while. And it's amazing history. It really is. It's amazing history to see it unfolding in front of you. At the time, there was a battle going on with the, I believe the leader at the time was pro-Russian. And there was this standoff on the street, two camps, one that wanted him out and one that was very pro-Russian. And we actually wandered around there. They were next to each other. They both had megaphones. They both were talking at the same time. It was insane. We went to one of the places where people were handing out leaflets. And it was very friendly, a lot of elderly people there. And then we went to the one next to it, the pro-Russian one. And there was something about it that was just so scary. We recorded this as we were doing it. And it was just so weird. They started following us. They started looking at us with suspicion. All we did was walk in and try to get leaflets from them too. It was a very different mood. And you could tell there was a big disconnect at the time. And this was years ago. The Ukrainian people have been living with this for a long time. Since that point, they had a revolution. They put in leaders that were more palatable to the people there. And they've tried to survive as best they could. And they've done a pretty good job of it, I have to say, with all the adversity they've been dealing with. So it's especially outrageous to see what's happening to them.
Yeah. Did that trip, you know, mean a lot in the context of what you saw over the last week? I'm curious why you would bring that up today. I mean, it's such a specific story that we've told before. And it just wasn't the first thing that's coming to me. But sure, yeah, there was so much. I remember when we were at the ticket counter in the Kiev station, they had like all those different ticket booths, and they had the military counter, and like you could only be like a soldier and you'd go up to that counter. And we were looking to try to find some ticket somewhere else in the station there. And that kind of goes along with the other story I had of Lviv, of like seeing, you know, young military members going off in the morning for training or whatever. So yeah, a lot of that is surely, yeah, it's a memory.
Well, I brought it up because it's the first time we went there. You're talking about the second time we went there twice, actually. The first time was, you know, this conflict has been going on for a while in different forms, because when we came back years later, it was after going to Moldova, a country I'm also worried about. And we decided that it would be better to cut through Kiev. And I'm going to get into Kiev and Kiev in a second. But we took a train, an overnight train, that was going to Kiev, and then it was going on to Moscow afterwards. I remember that. And I thought that was strange because, you know, there had been incursions by Russia at that point. We've moved on a couple of years. They seized Crimea. They seized a couple of. Basically, they made it a lot more hostile, a lot more dangerous, and we decided to cut through there anyway because I don't know why. It just seemed a little faster. But when we got to that city, and I remember the train station as you describe it, Kyle. They basically told us there's no way you can get out of Ukraine before next week. And it was kind of scary to hear that. And it was also a little maddening because we had reservations on some other train, or we had to be somewhere at a certain time. So we did what many people are now doing. And it's just so weird to see it unfolding again. People heading west, and on the map, hey, there's this place called Lviv, right next to the Polish border. It makes sense to go there and then take a train over to the border. And that's what we did. And it was very calm and very, I have such good memories of the place, and it's that makes it so much harder to see what's happening here.
Is your phone making some noise?
I don't know. This time you can't blame it on me because my phone's not even in the room. So, whose phone is in the room, Kyle? Must be your phone. I hear the noise too. I heard it, but
yeah.
I don't have my phone's all the way over. Yeah, it's. Anyway, anything else you want to share about that?
do I? So much, yeah. Like it's an amazing place. I remember just being full of life and just bustling, lots of activity. But that doesn't seem, you know, it's a memory, but it's not what's going on now, you know.
So let's talk about that.
I think we should, maybe. I've had a lot of things come to mind. I'm sure you have too. So, yeah, I think what you were talking about is the strong support and resistance and stuff that is, you know, flourished in Ukraine.
Right. Hmm. Any other thoughts, or?
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
Well, tell us your thoughts on what's going on.
I'm I'm going to say, like, I have a lot of ways of thinking about this. And, you know, we want to be positive and talk about the positive actors involved. We don't want to talk about the negative involved, I think.
Well,
that was kind of it. I mean, that's what I'm a little bit conflicted with. I know there's a lot of people that are a little upset. And you know what? I've been hearing a lot of complaining, but I'm hearing a lot of people not complaining.
People complaining here.
Yeah. I'm speaking in the abstract, but yeah, like it seems like some of the negative actors involved are complaining a lot. There's a lot of complaints. And then, you know, we've got political actors that are complaining a lot.
What are they complaining about?
Complaining about prices and things.
Oh,
and you know
prices.
What struck me? It just really set me off. And I kept thinking, I was like, right now you're worried about money.
Yeah. I would pay $10 a gallon for gas if it helped them out right now. You know, good point, because
I'm hearing... stop you and just say one thing before you get going?
Yeah.
My answer, I really don't want to hear this nationalistic stuff around that. I understand there may be a problem with export or whatever and supply capacity or whatever. I'm not going to speak to what this might replace, but what is stopping like an export block from Canada and Mexico and the US and South America from helping fill a void if there's like a lack of supply or something? I just don't understand. I don't know all of the like aspects of like crude and energy supplies. I don't really care. I don't want to be involved in that. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, the more I thought about it, like, maybe it's not just the U.S. that can fill some kind of supply gap. Maybe other people, you know, thinking of these ideas, I'm like, wait a minute, this is just about, like, money. Like, that is the concern from, you know, GOP or some of those cowards. I'm really disappointed. There's a lot of disappointment, and this is why I'm a little stilted right now, because I want to wax nostalgic, but I'm also... there's a lot of very specific things I want to talk about. So I'm kind of all over the place, but that was one thing, the energy argument, that lie, mm-hmm. On the pile of lies of all things, it's rich.
Well, you know, the thing that really got me was hearing, and you still hear it, Republicans saying, all right, Mr. Biden, stop your war on the fossil fuel industry. And you know, get rid of those regulations, using this human horror, you know, as an excuse to get their way. And that's why I said, I would sooner pay $10 a gallon or not have access at all before giving in like that. That is disgusting. That is awful.
Clears the sinuses.
Whew. Yeah, it sure does.
Just getting warmed up. And, you know, I the sanctions thing, that whole thing was spoken about, it was promised.
Mm-hmm.
That's never been done, but believe you me, push comes to shove now. That's where we're at. This is push comes to shove. And I know I'm speaking a little bit in hyperbole and parables, but that can now be a playbook, and maybe that could happen in like an hour now to anybody else ever again. So, like, you know, I'm in awe of the support and the reaction. Some people along the way, amazingly, you know, yes, they're seeing all this stuff on social media and this war, they're like, we want more, we want it faster, deny that, you know. And that's also sort of the adversary's ploy. But speaking positively, it's like, yeah, more was done, more is being done, and more will be done, and it won't stop. That's the message I've been getting. The other salient thing, I just want to get this out. Strong female leadership. I kept thinking of that. This appointment, this judge... that is a possibility for the Supreme Court of the United States of America.
Well, you jumped into that without any context. Okay, yeah, the Supreme Court nominee, yes.
That's just a small piece of this. And I'm seeing partly this like ascendance of strong female leadership, you know, because you know, when you look at this, what's his name? This guy that's doing this thing, there's no women around him. And there's a lot of other of these leaders and people around that they don't really have the same kind of leadership we're looking at now. But I know the current president has good family as the first lady, the leadership there. And you know who else? And I was really thinking top of mind is, what do you think Kamala Harris thinks about this?
I'd like to hear.
About bullying.
Yeah, I'd like to hear her say something.
Do you think she's confused? Do you think how many, and you know who else I saw is Amy Klobuchar at the Munich Security Conference. She looks like she could hang out in Germany. She should be there more. She looked a little bit like it was a new thing, but seeing that, seeing people step up and be, you know, I'm thinking that we're really lucky to have people, especially the female leadership. And I could go on and on about that. I think people in this that are in the boring jobs that do the work, you know, Dianne Feinstein just lost a partner. You know, you can say all you want about some of these people, but they're on some of these national security councils. They pay attention. All this boring stuff of government, when push comes to shove, they are who we look to in a functioning democracy. And guess what? NATO's kind of modeled on that too. And a lot of these countries outside of NATO as well, private companies, they may not get along on a lot of things. But they're tired of it too. They're tired of the lies. They're tired of the talk. This is action. I'm not even really getting into it. But those political things were the first things on my mind. I really hope, you know, because it was the joke and like tension, like war, men making war. I just felt like, you know, the joke when in like it's like a mid-2000s kind of sexist joke, like, well, women would you know, if they were running things. Well, we live in a society where that's possible, where they are. And you know what? That's the difference that these institutions hate. Whether it's, you know, a little bit of this other political party, whether it's other countries, they hate that we have difference and that we are equal. They hate that. They want everybody to be the same. They want all everybody to fall in line. I'm not going to say parts of the world. You know what? That's the State Department. I trust the government that I'm a part of. If anybody was ever confused about that, I'm not. Yeah, I'm in a real place of I guess resolve. That's what you said to me. I was really upset, and you said, "Add some resolve, Kyle." I was like, "Yeah, you're right." I think where a lot of other people were watching this stuff, thinking about our position and, you know, what was being said, how it was being tried, like how it was being blown out of proportion with political stuff. While at the same time, everything that I know deep down, was right, you know, that we knew what we were talking about for years, and many other people have been warning, and I'm proud that, you know, that difference that we're representing, other countries approve of. And like we said, private, public, Ukrainian diaspora, they recognize it because people get a say. They get to decide their destiny. And it's not all the same.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about, deciding your destiny. That's really what this fight is all about. And that's all the Ukrainians want, is to be able to make the decision. And, you know, I'm hearing a lot of nonsense, and this mostly from the left, actually, you know, about U.S. imperialism and how we backed Putin into a corner and nonsense like that. I mean, yeah, we're guilty of a lot of things, and we can have those conversations, and we do have those conversations, but this is the time to have the conversation about what's going on right now in front of our eyes. And if you actually are saying things like, you know, we're responsible for Putin acting like a madman, you don't have a very good grasp of reality, because he basically is making this situation and making it so much worse, and pretty much ensuring, you know, if you wanted NATO to go away, guess what? NATO's not going anywhere now. NATO's going to get bigger because of him. He is the biggest NATO cheerleader there is. There's no getting past that. Do you think for any minute, I mean, Finland and Sweden, we talked about this the other week, they're not members of NATO. Everyone thought they were, but they're not. They were neutral. They want to be members of NATO now, because Putin has basically demonstrated why NATO matters, why it's important. I wish we didn't have to have a NATO, but it's a good thing we do in this particular scenario. The thing that really, though, inspires me, you know, yeah, I hear what you're saying about, you know, strong leadership and diversity and all that. It's just the common everyday people over there. And I just wonder, would we live up to that? You know, if something like that were to happen here, would we be able to show that kind of courage? Grandmothers yelling at Russian soldiers. The most, they know how to insult somebody, but to say, here are some sunflower seeds, sunflowers being the national flower of Ukraine. Put these in your pocket so that when you die and rot in the ground, something will bloom. I mean, that is a well thought out insult. I don't know if our grandmothers could have come up with that, but You can see people are they feel very strongly about their homeland. And to say it's not a real country, wow, that is simply incredible. And I'm also hearing people saying Ukraine must promise never to join NATO and to remain neutral. No, they don't have to promise anything. All they have to promise is that they will do what they want to do as far as determining their own destiny. Right now, they want to join the EU. Fast-tracked, and I say go for it. They certainly have proven their worthiness. I don't know how this ends. I don't know how we get out of this in a good way. But I do know that if we cater to fear, and if we say, well, we're not gonna even try and talk about that because it might set somebody else off, That's not how you achieve anything other than a very tentative and uneasy peace. And we've seen that before. This is strength. And it's not necessarily military strength. It's people power. It's economic power. It's just morality, you know? And that is something I wasn't quite expecting to see on this level. I thought people would lose interest pretty quickly. I also thought the country would fall really quickly. Neither one has happened. And I wonder, you know, even if, and they say Kiev might, I gotta talk about the pronunciation in just a second, but they say the city might fall tonight or within the next few days or in the next week. Who knows? Even if that were to happen, they would have to keep it. The Russian soldiers would have to keep it. And do you really think they're going to be able to do that? I mean, think of the lessons that they learned already in Afghanistan. Think of the lessons we learned in Afghanistan. Yeah, they don't learn lessons well, but it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be cheap. And the thing that we're seeing from the few encounters with Russian soldiers is that they didn't really know what this was about. Apparently, they were told something different, that the people would welcome them, that they're basically liberating a Nazi regime and nonsense like that. And none of that's true. And they're beginning to see none of that is true. So maybe, you know, maybe they will join the people power. And that is my biggest hope, that the soldiers will wake up. I know it's hard for military cultures to act on individual thought, but sometimes when it's egregious enough, you do have to make a stand against your orders. Sometimes that happens. In addition to them, the people in Russia, I love the people of Russia. I've been there a couple of times, always had a great time, always, you know, the most amazing people. And those who do support this, I fear, are just horribly misled. I would like to assume that before I assume that they're as evil and insane as Putin is right now. And I don't mean insane in the literal sense, just he's acting insane. But there are so many people in Russia right now standing up for what is right, risking their own freedom doing that. Because if you just demonstrate in the street, you're thrown in prison. But that only works up to a certain degree if hundreds of thousands of people are out every single day doing this. And I've said the same thing in this country. You will have change. They can't keep up with that. Nobody can. So we need those courageous individual actions in Russia and also in Belarus. That's one of the reasons I mentioned Belarus earlier, because we're, you know, one of the few people around here that have seen that country. But there are incredible people there, too, who have been fighting to get out of the dictatorship of Lukashenko. And now is a particularly good time, as he has basically opened the door to Russian troops to use his country as an on-ramp to Ukraine. If there's suddenly an insurrection and all kinds of other battles to be fought on Belarusian soil, it certainly slows down that other effort. And the whole thing begins to unravel. If those three places, Ukraine, Belarus, Russia, the people are standing up, nowhere is it more important for the people to be standing up than in those three places. And know that the rest of the world is right there with them. That's my hope.
Yeah, I agree. I wish I could have talked more freely with the people in Minsk. They've had that kind of cagey response, like, who are you? Why are you asking me this? Even innocent things, when you ask, you know, as a foreigner to another foreigner overseas, there's, of course, the, like, why necessarily? How much do I want to say? You have to kind of find a middle ground. That's diplomacy at the personal level. You're a student. Would you like to travel elsewhere? No. Okay. Yes. Fun. Of course. Yeah, I'd love to. That sounds like it's great. But you don't get an answer in the way that maybe a personal friend in your neighborhood would speak to you about their latest trip.
Well, I've actually been to Belarus, I think, three times. And one time I went there, I remember I talked to a guy in a hotel. I was asking him about Wi-Fi. And he basically just made this remark saying, yes, they won't let us have Wi-Fi in this country. Just the way he said it, you knew there was something there. You knew there was something bubbling underneath. And that is the kind of thing that gives me hope.
I'll say also, and there's always more than meets the eye. And after, I saw some cool specials. I guess they're doing like art. Like there's like some mural and graffiti stuff that was going on in Minsk, which is really cool. There's always good art, street art and stuff. That's a good thing to get a sense of the culture. But these are places everybody should want to visit and explore more. Mm-hmm. But if they're closed cities, you know, it's hard to share and make more people around the world aware of how important a place it is. Yeah. And you don't realize it until maybe something happens there, or there's tumult, or there's people leaving there talking about horrible things that are being done, or that, you know, lack of opportunity. And, you know, when that crisis overflows, that's when we hear about these places. Well, that's when you get that blasé indifference from the city folk or whatever, people in the West who are like, oh yeah, it's another crisis somewhere I don't have any connection to. Well, that's part of having more people check these places out, to realize they're perfectly normal, but they have, you know, their own hurdles and their own story and neighborhood. So you'll understand these things much earlier on and understand where they fit in history and an impact of, you know, even really tangentially your life or the rest of humanity.
This is why we travel. This is why we go to these places. And for, people ask, why do you go there? People ask, why did you come here? They always wondering, why do you go to these places? Albania, Kosovo, Belarus, because they're interesting. They're different. They have a history. They have a future. They're part of the world stage. And one day they will be in the headlines and we'll have perspective. We can look back and say, I remember that place. I was at that particular location. This is what the people are like. This is what the culture is. And while you don't get the full picture, you get something. And you feel this kinship when something like this happens.
Well, when you see some border guard overrun on video and you're like, you know, I've actually interacted with a border guard from that country or this place in the world. I have a stamp somewhere for that.
Oh, I got to find our passport stamps. Got to find our passports. But yeah, and we will be back. We will come back to this because they are going to win. That's my prediction. I don't know how they're going to win. Militarily seems doubtful, but I think that's not a guarantee anymore. You know, having military might doesn't always get you the battle. It doesn't always win you the war. And that's my hope, is that this is the lesson we learn, is that it's, you know, it's the mass consciousness. It's people power. That is what you need. And no military is a match for that.
Yeah. And to like have listening, you know, when you visit places, even like in Europe, if you're like open and even when you're criticized or like when, you know, there's not, you know, as much common ground, like you never forget people that you meet, those interactions, those places. And I don't take it personally because there's, you know, plenty to critique about where I'm from. And I don't go out for other people about where they're from. But I also respect and I have their back. I support them doing what they're doing. And that's why we get, you know, phone calls. People follow up with us. They send us an email to otw@2600.com. They check in, you know, they tell us about what's going on in their part of the world. And that is the world we live in. That's the world most people want to be a part of.
Now, I said I was going to mention the pronunciation of the city. Last week I said I'm going to keep saying Kiev because I don't see any reason to change. That's changed. I see a reason now. I learned something about this. And I should have done this earlier. My fault. Basically, the transliteration to Kiev from Kiev, spelled K-Y-I-V instead of K-I-E-V, it was legally mandated back in 1995 by the Ukrainian government. It's part of a broader campaign on its correct UA, UA, the initials for Ukraine, which advocates a change of name in English, not only for Kyiv, which is how I'm saying it from now on, but also for other Ukrainian cities where whose English names are derived from Russian as well. I didn't know that. I didn't know that the name was derived from Russian. And, you know, I've talked about this to a number of people, and there's been, you know, sort of this resentment almost, where people say, yeah, it's part of the Ukrainian government's attempt to remove Russian from their city names. And they sound angry about it. And you have to ask, well, what makes you think they shouldn't do that? I mean, look what's happening right now. Russia is bombing them. Russia is invading them.
Yeah, it's a form of cultural erasure.
Why shouldn't they take Russian out of the names of their cities?
Yeah, and that identity has been changed. And, you know, if the current cultural and popular elected government feels like, you know, this is important for our identity and for reinforcing the direction we want to go, then this simple thing will be better for us than the vestiges of a prior political situation.
Yeah, it's that's the real reason, you know, right there. It's the Russian way of saying it is different than the way they, the people in the country, wish to say it. So Kyiv it is, no longer Kiev. It's just a, you know, it's a small thing. It's a small thing, but you realize it looking at various news outlets. Some still say Kyiv, and that tells you something about who they are, or maybe they didn't do their research either. Is that a possibility? Speaking of news outlets, what have we been looking at for news? Maybe we can give our listeners some advice on where to tune, where not to tune. I'm so happy that CNN got called out for playing a ridiculous commercial in the middle of horrible war atrocities being broadcast. We complained about this last week.
Yeah, that used to be their thing as like war coverage in the 90s and stuff. They had like box VHS sets of Desert Storm, you know? It's like
all they did, didn't they?
CNN's greatest hits, and it was pretty gross. But, well, whatever. It was what it was. It was, you know, it was what they were up to. They were like the very, you know, the first sort of embedding and, you know, real-time coverage. This is different. This is pretty wild, but it shows you how much news and information is important. I think the ministry has been entertaining to follow. The government themselves, the Ukrainian ministry, their social media and stuff has been pretty funny and brilliant in the moment. And that's really important because they're really in a vulnerable spot as a nation. And every little bit of that counts when you are fighting for your life.
I don't think they have a news channel, though, do they, Ukraine?
No, I was talking about social media. Like, posts and stuff like that have been something where people have been following a lot of different things. I know you found a really cool website that is pretty...
Well, there are sites that show live cam footage. Yeah, it's interesting because we have this up. I think we're using Roku to get to it over YouTube. And it's just basically you type a live Kyiv cameras and you'll see maybe one picture or maybe eight pictures rolled up into one of various street scenes. And there's audio coming from one of them. The audio is fascinating because church bells ring every quarter hour and then you hear air raid sirens. And I got to say, it's really crazy just to hear those air raid sirens, because if you have the TV on loud, you'll hear it throughout the entire house, and you just sort of feel, wow, this is what they're going through right now at this moment. They're running for shelter.
I think, okay, the newspaper is Kyiv Independent, right? That's it, right?
I think so, an online newspaper, Kyiv Independent. Yeah, I don't have the exact, but if you look it up on Twitter, I think they have a Twitter feed as well.
Oh, I didn't get the update. Kyiv.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, you better believe they spell it the right way.
Kyiv.
K-Y-I-V. So anyway, Al Jazeera English is an amazing channel. I don't know if anyone in the States is able to get that. We get it through our Canadian satellite. But Al Jazeera English, I've never seen a commercial on there. They have all kinds of live footage, very evenly balanced footage as well, and just intelligent. It's incredible. I know we're afraid of them because they're from an Arab country. Don't be. They have better coverage than BBC many times. But BBC is pretty amazing. BBC World News, if you get that channel. I know Optimum in the New York area does. Euronews, certainly, one channel down from them. European Perspective. There are a lot of good options out there, and you can get most of these things online as well if you can't get them on your actual television provider. And of course, there's all sorts of publications as well where you can get information. You don't have to all get it from the same place, you know. But one of the most interesting ones is RT. Yeah, Russia Today. Now, they're terrible. They're terrible because they're run by the government. They're run by the Russian government. But you still need to see what they're saying. You need to see the lies. just like, you know, you might sort of be curious about what Fox News is saying tonight. Yeah, this is what the entire population of Russia hears, and they don't hear anything else. And if you watch this for even 5 minutes and you start saying to yourself, oh, well, I'd never really thought about it that way before, you're starting to get sucked in. You're starting to see, oh my God, they have Nazi rallies in Ukraine, you know, and the United States is part of the whole thing and all sorts
of
lies.
Just stop. Don't say that.
Believe me.
Don't say that. It's not even funny. Like,
I'm not. They are, Kyle, they are saying this. If you turn them on, you will see footage of what they are ostensibly saying.
Putting it out there. No.
I am not putting it out there. It's out there. I am telling people this is what's out there.
No one wants to hear it.
I'm not trying to be funny. I'm saying these are the lies they are spreading. We have to confront them.
And you're spreading it by talking about it.
Don't be so Orwellian. Look. I am not going to not say anything because I don't like what they say. I'm going to point out that they are lying. They are saying these things. These are the lies they're coming up with. If you hear that, you are being lied to. Yeah. And don't make the mistake of pretending they don't exist. They exist. And I'm seeing that they're being banned in many places, and that's fine. You know, if you're a cable provider had Russia Today, and now they say, you know what, we're not going to cover this anymore. We're not going to have this on our system. They have that right. They can do that. But you should still be able to hunt them down and see what they're saying, just like you should be able to read newspapers from any place in the world and learn all kinds of things, even if they are lies. And you should be able to tell people about it. That is what's important. All right. Hey, we're out of time. I don't know if it's basketball or lacrosse. There's a game coming up in 5 minutes. I should have mentioned this at the start. We have to get out of here a little bit early tonight. But before we go, I just wanted to share something which I thought was kind of magical and just yet another example of the amazing things going on. Dee Snider from Twisted Sister, you might know that name. He recently went public saying that, you know, their anthem, we're not going to take it. He said he wants the Ukrainians to use that. They have all the permission that they could ever ask for from him. He did not give the permission when asked for the Freedom Convoy, the truckers. You remember them? They're in the past already. They wanted to use that song for their stupid campaign, and he basically made fools of them and said, no, you're a bunch of imbeciles. You're a bunch of tantrum toddlers. But these people, these courageous fighters in Ukraine, yes, this is your song. And we're going to go out with that song. I would like to hear a version of this in Ukrainian at some point, but I know people are busy, but I'm sure it'll come out.
Yeah, just on that note, pay attention to the people complaining and the people who aren't complaining in the worst of situations and doing something.
Well said. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Next week, we'll have some more news about this, and I'm sure it'll be interesting. Stay tuned for the game.